Our final speaker is John Partington, the family newspaper. Forrest Gump, You Run My Mind, Boy. The emotional labor of disidentification in Frank Ocean's Channel Orange. John's paper is going to explore the emotional labor and world-making potential of disidentification in Frank Ocean's song, Forrest Gump. Interpolated by racialized and heteronormative ideology, Ocean, as a queer and color subject, must work on and against that ideology to invest it with new meaning. Ocean's performance as a form of musical labor involves negotiating the hypermasculine and heterosexual stereotypes attached to black male bodies in black popular music. This topic is one strand of Partington's major research project here at McMaster University, wherein he investigates the significance of Ocean's album Channel Orange to the genre of contemporary R&B and as a cultural artifact in the post-soul era. His academic interests beyond Frank Ocean include Black Atlantic Studies, Black Popular Music since 1960, and Black Masculinity Scholarship.
Okay, perfect. Thanks, Jacqueline. So, as she mentioned, my paper is entitled Forrest Gump, You Run My Mind, Boy, The Emotional Labor of Disidentification in Frank Ocean's Channel Orange. So, today I will explore the queer worlds that could be created through performance on the track Forrest Gump, and this is taken from his newest album, Channel Orange, which was released in June of 2012. Critics in GQ, Vibe, Details, and The Advocate take up Ocean's social media coming out story to suggest he is doing the cultural work needed to transform the conventions of contemporary R&B, and for some, hip-hop as well. In this paper, I hope to think about the characteristics and productive capacities of this labor. So using Jose Esteban Munoz's theory of disidentification, as Craig did, together we can interpret the ways in which Ocean musically works on and against dominant ideology to invest it with new meaning. Ocean's disidentificatory performance might be described as a kind of emotional labor because he works to enact permanent structural change by crooning to his male lover. As a minoritarian subject, Ocean's disidentification works to negotiate ideological interpolation and subject formation in a hegemonic public sphere. Ocean's recycling and restructuring of musical and pop cultural elements in Forrest Gump might be said to rehearse a queer utopia where, again, queer lives, politics, and possibilities can be imagined in their complexity. Important for our discussion is the work required to reuse black church worship songs, 60s soul instrumentation, crooner vocals, the romance narrative of the film Forrest Gump, and the falsetto as hypermasculine pimping gesture. Although Ocean's love is supposedly unrequited, his performance labors to create queer musical narratives, specifically the story of Forrest and Frank, in a genre that polices heterosexual masculinity. For Munoz, disidentifying is a survival strategy that queer of color subjects employ to navigate a racist and heteronormative public sphere. Disidentification can be understood as three different parts. Disidentification is a hermeneutic, a process of production, and a mode of performance. As a method of interpretation, disidentification allows the critic to decode mass high or any cultural field from the perspective of a minority subject who is disempowered in any representational hierarchy. As a process of production, disidentification scrambles and reconstructs the code of the majority. Disidentification uses this code as a raw material for representing disempowered politics or positionalities. As a mode of performance, disidentification is a necessary interjection that seeks to rewrite, reform, rethink, and recycle cultural objects in a way that gestures towards queer worlds. So Munoz utilizes Louis Althusser's theory of interpolation to describe how queer of color subjects can work on and against ideology. As we know, Althusser asserts as a Marxist that ideology calls individuals into being as subjects through the category of subject. More specifically, quote, ideology hails or interpolates concrete individuals as concrete subjects by the very functioning of the category of concrete subject. In other words, to be a subject is to be always already interpolated. So this leads to a question, how do minority subjects participate in subject formation when they are interpolated by these discourses that are racist and heteronormative? Munoz suggests that disidentifying is often the answer. Working on ideology suggests there is still a relationship between the subject and that ideology, while working against ambivalently suggests opposition. So disidentification is about working from within ideology to transform and possibly recenter it. However, the ambivalent tensions of on and against means that ideology could be recentered for or against the subject's ambitions. Simon Frith encourages critics to consider popular music as a kind of labor. Audiences are drawn to performance because of its liveliness, the sense of risk, danger, triumph, or virtuosity in difficult or spectacular acts. Artists in performance work with their bodies. For singers, like Frank Ocean, their vocal labor sometimes isn't pretty. Singers sweat, they strain, they open their mouths wide and clench their throats. Queer of color subjects must labor to negotiate desire, identification, and ideology in the making of identity. The disidentifying subject, if successful, can rewrite and reform encoded cultural messages in a way that exposes the universalizing and exclusionary discourses of that code or that message. So for Munoz, there's obviously a lot at stake in disidentifying. All of these performances require an active kernel of possibility. Munoz is adamant that we need to, quote, risk utopianism if we are to engage in the labor of making a queer world. Critics must stay open to the world-making power of queer performances or miss out on transformative possibility. So with this in mind, let's listen to the song Forrest Gump. I've broken it up into four sections so we can kind of listen, talk, and go through, and you can also follow along if you like through the lyrics. So this is section number one.
I wanna see pom-poms from the stands. Come on, come on. My fingertips and my lips, they burn from the cigarettes. Forrest Gump, you run my mind, boy. Running on my mind, boy. Forrest Gump.
Okay, so we hear in this section the minimalist quality of the track, and I think that that minimalism is a vehicle to showcase the emotional crooning of Frank's voice. This strategy exposes all the defined elements of the song, or the bare bones. These elements include Ocean's voice, the organ, we get the treble twang of the guitar. Later on, there are some diegetic film sounds, as well as the medium tempo of the backbeat. I think we're at about 85 for this tempo. This song begins with the playing of the organ and then eventually builds to a falsetto harmony at the end that we haven't heard yet. So in section one, the organ draws a parallel with tradition gospel worship songs. Forrest Gump is heavily influenced by gospel church music elements, these elements that are then reformed for queer world-making purposes. Singing in the black church is the primary vehicle of spiritual transport for the worshiping congregation. Ocean creates a repetitive chant with organ sounding and choral backup singers, adding to his voice. These voices support the message he is serving by whistling, clapping, and lending their voices as a congregation of listeners. Eric Lincoln observes that singing is very attractive to black church members in church. Singing is second only to preaching as the magnet of attraction in worship. The black church has no challengers, the cultural womb of the black community. It not only gives birth to new institutions such as schools, banks, insurance companies, and low-income housing, it also provides an academy and an arena for musical, dramatic, and artistic development. So it's clear the black church has a lot of influence in the black community. While acknowledging the importance of the black church to the black community, Patricia Hill Collins criticizes the black church for failing to, quote, challenge arguments about sexual deviancy, promiscuity, and homosexuality. For Hill Collins, the Bible has been misused by the black church to, quote, justify the oppression of homosexuals. Ocean disidentifies with the dominant homophobic ideology in the black church by utilizing elements of the gospel sound in a homosexual love song, thereby reinvesting it with new meaning. Don Cusick observes that the congregation joins in on church worship songs during key lines, phrases, or the chorus. Worship songs are, quote, easily learned and easily remembered because of their repetitiveness and emotional appeal. In Forrest Gump, Ocean is the lead singer who is accompanied by the organ. The backup singers, who we'll hear soon, join in on particular lines to support his crooning. They croon with Ocean, my fingertips and my lips, they burn from the cigarettes. Forrest Gump, you run my mind, boy, running on my mind, boy. The hook of Forrest Gump is repeated 17 times throughout the song. And I read this repetition of the pet name as a congregational rehearsing of the love story that is formed through disidentifying. Easily learned and easily remembered, singing Forrest Gump over and over again testifies to and legitimizes the narrative that is vocally constructed. In this section, we also hear the dynamic interplay between Ocean's voice, the organ, and the treble twang of the guitar in a kind of call and response relationship. Robert Baumann observes that the call and response style, not only to individual voices, but also to instruments, is a celebrated motif of soul music, in particular the music of Otis Redding and the Memphis Soul sound. The medium tempo backbeat and introductory organs in Forrest Gump is similar to Redding's Try a Little Tenderness, while the treble guitar is similar to Redding's Security. Francesca Royster suggests that soul as a musical genre and as an ideal privileges and polices heterosexual masculinity, reflects a Christian influence at its base, and embraces the sensual and procreative power of Black sexuality. Ocean's use of instruments popular in soul music recalls the musical history of soul as well as Black power movements in the 1960s, while also deriving new meanings for more in tune with the contemporary and potentially queer experiences of Blackness. In The Power of Black Music, Samuel Floyd Jr. describes the call and response as a foundational trope of all Black music. For Floyd Jr., the execution of call response tropes opens up a symbolic field where, quote, the initiated, the knowledgeable, and the culturally sensitive can access personal and or group emotional experience. Ocean might be said to employ the call response trope to open up lines of heightened communication between performer and audience that explore Black homosexuality. So let's move on to section number 2.
I know you're Forrest. I know you wouldn't hurt a beetle. But you're so buff and so strong. I'm nervous, Forrest. Forrest Gump. My fingertips and my lips, they burn from the cigarettes. Forrest Gump, you run my mind, boy. Running on my mind, boy. Forrest Gump.
Okay, so in section 2, we can start to comment upon the timbre of Ocean's voice. Ocean usually sings in a tenor vocal range on Channel Orange, and I think we sort of hear that here in Forrest Gump. Ocean's tenor vocals recall the innocence and devotion of a singer like Smokey Robinson and his flexible tenor. Especially in a song like You Really Got a Hold on Me by The Miracles, we can hear parallels between Robinson's tenor storytelling, also assisted in that song by the treble guitar, and Ocean's flexible tenor of singing voice that sings to his male lover. Critics in The Guardian and The New Yorker label Ocean's vocal vulnerability as crooning. So, conventionally, crooning is a style of singing where emotional white men intimately sing to a white female lover. Alison McCracken notes that crooning is associated with the invention of the microphone in the 1920s. This new technology allowed male crooners to sing, quote, intensely emotional music, both softly and intimately with their audiences. Crooners present themselves to women as objects of desire. They put themselves in a passive position. They yearn and plead for their dream girls. These women are usually portrayed as stronger and more emotionally secure than they are. In crooning songs, the man waits and pines for the woman, pining all his hopes and dreams on her. The crooner has no desire but to be with her, and when she leaves him, the crooner is devastated. So in this section, Ocean puts himself in a passive and pining position not only vocally, but also by confessing his love from the stands. Ocean is nervous for the outcome of the football match, which in turn is a metaphor for the Frank and Forrest relationship. Chain-smoking to cope, he croons, "My fingertips and my lips, they burn from the cigarettes." Given the affective influence Forrest has upon him, it's no surprise that Ocean is nervous. In the chorus, he croons again, "Forrest Gump, you run my mind, boy, running on my mind, boy." Ocean disidentifies with the white and heterosexual conventions of crooning in his performance. If you've heard Thinking About You or Bad Religion from the album Channel Orange, this passive and pining voice is even more pronounced. For me, thinking about sensitivity and vulnerability by Black male singers conjures up the performances of Luther Vandross in the 1980s. Vandross, like Whitney Houston, is known for, quote, elevating riffing to a high art form. Think of his song, A House Is Not a Home, for example. Ocean's vocal performance contains less riffing than Vandross's, but it does recall his vocal sensitivity. At the same time, Ocean recycles and reforms Robinson's tenor and Vandross's pop melisma with a melancholic timbral color by crooning over a lost love object. So let's move to section number 3.
Forrest Gump, my fingertips and my lips, they burn from the cigarettes. Forrest Gump, you run my mind, boy. Running on my mind, boy. Forrest Gump, forest green, forest blues. I'm remembering you. This is love, I know it's true. I won't forget you.
Okay, so in section three, we start to hear the diegetic film sounds from the Robert Zemeckis film Forrest Gump that was released in 1994. In particular, we hear the iconic end zone scene during the college football game. In the film, Forrest Gump, who is played by Tom Hanks, plays football at the University of Alabama. Ocean recalls this scene in the lyrics, "I saw your game, Forrest. I was screaming, run 44, but you kept running past the end zone." Fragments of recreated film sounds, we hear sports commentators, whistles blowing, fans cheering, are included throughout the song to sonically establish the scene. Jennifer Hyland Wang notes that Hank's portrayal of Forrest Gump in the film is used as a vehicle for the technological reconstruction of post-war history. More specifically, Hyland Wang sees Forrest Gump as, quote, a discursive relay station that reasserts the timelessness of traditional American values. These values are hegemonic in that they are coded as white and male, and I would add heterosexual. Forrest and Jenny go together like peas and carrots, we need to remember. Ocean reforms and recycles dominant ideology that is perpetuated in Forrest Gump by taking up the football scene for his own purposes. We also hear the backup singers more prominently in this section. Jacqueline Warwick's analysis of community building in girl groups' girl culture demonstrates how the choral backup singers support Ocean's voice. Warwick observes that the mere presence of backup singers, quote, signifies a collective, a community of singers who agree and support the lead singer's position. Backup singers lend their voices to, quote, strengthen the statements of an individual voice. I want to suggest that community is established in the song between Ocean's singers and his voice as well. Ocean's song opens with the verse, "I want to see your pom-poms from the stands. Come on, come on." Ocean and the backup singers are not only communicating with the audience in the stands at the football game, but also the audience that listens to his music. We're invited to share in the community created between Ocean and the chorus singers. We're invited to cheer, support, and become a part of the Forrest and Frank story. This invitation is the kernel of utopian possibility that Munoz speaks of. Let's move to section four. So in section four, we hear a momentary change in rhythm that parallels a change in vocal composition. We hear the overdubbing of Ocean's voice that creates harmony in the final verse of the song. Ocean also employs the falsetto as he reveals his love for another man. The use of overdubbing effectively allows Ocean to harmonize with himself, thereby creating the layered illusion of backup singers. This sonic layering can be heard when he croons, "You, you, of you, you, it's for you, Forrest, Forrest Gump." For my purposes here, overdubbing is a process of re-recording the same vocal performance with one's own voice to add layers of sound to the track. Ocean's use of vocal layering recalls many of the songs from neo-soul singer D'Angelo's album Voodoo that was released in 2000. In particular, I'm thinking of D'Angelo's song entitled How Does It Feel, which uses extensive overdubbing to emphasize the importance of harmony over lyrical clarity. Keith Harris sees D'Angelo as a performer of soul intertextuality because his musical arrangements and instrumentation provide, quote, contemporary, updated versions of soul music's orchestration. Ocean might be said to do something similar, although he disidentifies with the conventions of the falsetto in contemporary R&B. Mark Anthony Neal contends that in rhythm and blues, the falsetto, when performed by male singers, is a mode of hypermasculine performance. Put another way, the falsetto is part of the pimping trope of rhythm and blues, wherein black male performers demonstrate they are masters of style. Black male performers draw from the ability of black masculinity to sensually seduce, the virile, vibrant, visceral, viscous, and vicarious ability in black masculinity. I'm thinking of R. Kelly's song, Feeling Single, for example, from his newest album, Write Me Back. In contrast, Ocean demonstrates his vulnerability with the falsetto as he confesses his love for another man. This is love, I know it's true, I won't forget you. It's for you, Forrest, Forrest Gump. Ocean invests the falsetto with new meaning in the genre of contemporary R&B by using his high-pitched vocals to communicate his love, loss, and resulting vulnerability instead of sensually seducing women. Munoz warns that disidentification is not always an adequate strategy of resistance. He goes to great lengths in disidentifications to problematize any pre-critical celebratory aura that might attach itself to disidentification. Queer worlds are not magically and automatically realized. In fact, sometimes disidentification is insufficient. However, through disidentifying, queer worlds are suggested, rehearsed, and articulated. I'm trying to understand the ambivalence of working on and against, and the queer utopias that might be possible in that ambivalence. So I question, how do we evaluate the queer worlds that are gestured towards? Other eccentric queer artists also disidentify in performance to enact radical transformations, and I'm not sure how eccentric this performance is in the mainstream. My project looks to contextualize Forrest Gump in relation to the rich history of black queer performance and performers. I'm thinking of black popular music artists like Little Richard, Prince, Grace Jones, and Michael Jackson, writers like Langston Hughes, Richard Bruce Nugent, and James Baldwin in the Harlem Renaissance, filmmakers and choreographers like Isaac Julian, Marlon Riggs, and Bill T. Jones, performers like Bessie Smith, Big Mama Thornton, Sylvester, Michelle Endicello, and RuPaul. I'm also interested in comparing Forrest Gump to artists in what's being called the queer hip-hop movement, Deep Dick Collective, Mickey Blanco, who was recently here in Hamilton a couple weeks ago, Leaf, and John Tay. Radical transformations aside, critics and artists alike should continue to disidentify with this world until we, quote, achieve new ones. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was really beautiful. And I think that your taking up of music adds a lot to Munoz's idea of disidentification that seems to be missing, because he just takes up kind of like live performance. And I think music kind of pulls out a lot of really interesting things that was previously lacking. I was wondering if you could talk a bit more about the use of this allusion to backup singing in the fourth section. And that performative choice as opposed to the collectivity you talked about in sessions 1 and 2, and this idea of like vulnerability that comes in the fourth section. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure.
It seems oppositional, I guess. The vulnerability of the voice established within the community of these singers. And so that was something I was trying to work through, because especially at the very beginning of the track and then in the second section, it's kind of distorted backup singers that are happening. They're just little moments here and there. It's not necessarily kind of an established chorus, but then through the overdubbing of his voice, an established chorus is created there. And so it's definitely a tension that's going on. But I think it works within kind of the play of the song. I mean, generally it follows that typical pop song, kind of slow and then, you know, work its way up. To the love revelation or the climax of the song. So, yeah.
Isn't this the last song on the album as well?
It is.
So there's a certain context, I think, if this is an album I think people actually listen to some degree as an album. And so, you know, you have lots of really compelling solitary performances, and you conclude by finally bringing in other voices of support or solidarity at the end, gives a context. But my question, refers to Ocean's performance of the song at the Grammy Awards. So, biggest audience he's ever had. This is the song he does. I'm curious if you have any thoughts as to how or if any of the ideas you're discussing translated into that performance.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, first of all, a lot of people
criticized the performance. They didn't think it was up to standards vocally, and we know Shane says that he couldn't hear himself when he was singing or something to that effect. But it's definitely a bold choice, I would say. I think its position on the album is definitely very strategic. Track number 16 and then the outro, so it's definitely the last song there, because I don't know if anyone's followed his kind of social media story, but this is why he's receiving a lot of attention. And a lot of the criticism that I've read really focuses on what's been happening before the album, but not necessarily looking at what the album is about. There are some critics who do, but the treatment of queerness is very interesting to me. In relation to the performance at the Grammys, I mean, I think that performance and choosing to do Forrest Gump relates to all of the talking around issue that he does in interviews or in a lot of the magazines that I've seen. What was the last part of your question?
Well, you know, I guess maybe to talk on my thought of the performance, it's interesting how he took, you know, the interesting thing about the song is how he takes this extreme, you know, white, heteronormative film, extremely, you know, arguably reductionist view of history, and changes it into kind of a very alternative way. And I felt that the performance, by just emphasizing, was really cool. If you haven't seen it, it's a cool multimedia effect that he does, where it makes it look like he's running as Forrest Gump. But it doesn't play with that idea very much. Like, the song's lyrics still speak, but the audiovisual thing, I think, didn't add anything to the interesting subtext going on here.
Yeah, I've been really struggling to situate the importance of the appropriation of the movie, because, I mean, the movie comes from a book, and the book is different than the film, and I was struggling to treat disability in that film, right? I mean, Forrest Gump as a figure is kind of used as this vehicle for many things, and I've been struggling to find criticism about that, but I mean, it does seem standard in popular culture to use disability figures in this way. And also, I mean, to use that recalls, I mean, to make it familiar. A lot of people know this movie, it won a number of Academy Awards. But to change it, but not change it that much, so, yeah.
There's a question. Oh, just looking back, sorry, back to the back of vocals, I actually had a thought from listening to the back of vocals in the earlier sections. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because in your comments just a couple of moments ago, you mentioned that they were more distorted, in those words.
Yeah.
And I actually had that sense that they were actually quite far removed from Frank Ocean's vocals, just in terms of how they're situated in the mix. And I really love the lyrics of the song, so I might have a different opinion on second listening, but
sure.
I was wondering if that actually further led to this disidentification, right? Mm-hmm. He's sort of appropriating you know, gospel traditions and church culture, sort of using this distancing from those vocals to maybe further disidentify. I don't know, it's just a little bit of a different reading.
Yeah.
But it might coincide well with your analysis of the overdubbing in the fourth section, where we're really getting that more strong sense of collective coming in at the end.
Yeah. No, definitely. You're right. Most of his music is pretty sparse like this. I mean, it has a couple of elements here and there, and then maybe, you know, a remixing of the melody so it doesn't end as you initially thought, but yeah, it's definitely an aesthetic that he likes to use. And I even think of one of the songs from Beyonce's new album, Miss You, it's on the album 4. He actually wrote and produced that song, and I didn't know that. And then I had read it in an article and went back to listen to that song, and it could have come off, you know, Channel Orange, which is really interesting. And it has that same kind of aesthetic in that a lot of focus on the vocals, a very minimal backbeat or instrument accompaniment. So. And then the backup singers as well.
Maybe we have time for one more.
Great job. I was just struck again with listening to the song again. And I know you mentioned the repetition of the name Forrest Gump. But I was so struck by it, and I am every time I hear this song. And it kind of struck me today as this narrative doesn't progress, right? Because he keeps repeating, and there's something really interesting about that. He's just kind of stalled out in the narrative expression of his love for Forrest Gump or his infatuation or whatever is going on there. And I don't know what to say beyond that, but I just think it's something really kind of central to this song. And it, the music kind of does that too. It does, it, yeah, it's kind of circular, although it does build in this way, right, with the addition of the backups and this addition and stuff. But
again, a building kind of ambiguous way, so it's
the groove, I think, right? Like,
In the moment, it's a very present time.
Unusual for the last thing too, right?
Oh, and now I'm just sort of thinking about, I think it's, I can't remember who's, either Rob Owen or Dave Brackett, I can't remember, he talks about funk, or James Brown's funk in particular, as just being very presentist. And you get a lot of chord changes and moving forward and tonal progression and all of that kind of stuff.
Great, well, I hear that others have been released to get back in.